Today on 92.3, the Fan Loaded Show, we are talking sports. That's what we do here. And Andrew Berry is going to be talking Browns at 1 o'clock today. You can catch it live during Baskin and Phelps on Sports Radio 92.3, the Fan. An instant reaction by the boys. Baskin been dealing a little bit with cold and flu season. I think he's back today with Phelps, but they are going to be reacting to what they hear. Andrew Berry will talk, I believe, right at 1 and should be like a 15-minute window. And then Daryl Ryder is in for Kent Carman today. Kevin Stefanski,
tomorrow.
We will hear from tomorrow.
Yep.
Same time?
Yes. Well, I don't know about same time, but we'll hear from him tomorrow.
All right. And, of course, we'll carry that live as well. 216-474-0092. Hey, something happened overnight that directly impacts your Cleveland Cavaliers, and that was an overtime thriller with the Minnesota Timberwolves coming from down 20. You see more and more of that in the NBA. You see more blowouts in the NBA because of the three-point situation. You also see more huge, huge comebacks. You're never really out of a game. Unless you're the,
except for
the 76ers.
The Cavs.
Yeah, well, the Cavs have held on to those leads. They've dominated, and they've had a lot of wire-to-wire victories
40-0
this year.
40-0, leading after three.
So what changed last night is the Cavs now have, by themselves, by their lonesome, the best record in the NBA. They've got 25 games to go and this delightful season, which was a nice fun start, right? Were they 15-0?
Yep.
Now it's, not only are they legitimate, I mean, they are an absolute dynamo. They're a powerhouse. And I'm starting to see more and more people say, yeah, not only are they going to give Boston all they could ever want in a series, but they could actually beat them. And I've been somebody that has been so hesitant to do that out of respect to the Celtics. I said earlier this year, the Celtics, to me, have the most perfect group, the perfect roster you can build in this new era of the CBA. And now I'm sitting there going, yeah, well, you know, Cavs are pretty good too. And I wouldn't be as stunned as I would have been even like a month ago if the Cavs pulled it off and beat them four times in a seven series. We're going to have home court advantage now. Like, that is gone, unless there is a crazy influx of injuries for the Cavs. And even then, they could still hold on. What are they, six games ahead of Boston for that number one seed? Things are shifting here. Things are shifting dramatically to where they have been the hunter. Are they now the hunted? Can you say that, Daryl? Are they going to get the best shot like tonight?
They've been
national
getting the
television.
Best shot. You've already been getting it. They're already the hunt. Once they started 15-0, they absolutely became the
hunter. You think every team is now measuring where they're at with where the Cavs are?
Yeah, you've got the dregs of the league when they come to Cleveland. Like, if you beat the Cavaliers, that just made your season, right? That's where you're at. By the way, got a question for you.
Yeah.
Going to join me for game one of the NBA Finals at Rocket Arena in June? Will you be there with me? Going to come over? Hang out?
Well, if I'm
maybe we throw one
then,
back?
By then, the kids are old enough. I'm allowed to get out of the house then.
Take them and throw a phone right in front of them.
I have not been to a Cavs game this year.
Maybe
it's
have the kids watch Little Miss Rachel while, you know, the
Well, I need
going
a suite.
On.
If you guys, if somebody can procure a suite, then Miss Rachel will be blaring in the suite.
On the TV instead of the game?
Yeah, you don't need it on the game. You got the game out in front of you, especially the lower suites. Lower suites, that's a game changer. That is a congratulations on all your success. I'd like to start. I told my wife, we got to go to a game now. Like, let's go. Let's jump on the bandwagon here because I've been forbidden to leave the house.
Can I interest you in a different form of entertainment?
Okay, go ahead. Is she back?
Yeah.
Especially for a Cavs playoff run?
You're back. How you know it's legit. That's how you know they believe they're going to the finals.
Now, this isn't like getting Aaron Rodgers at age 40. Like, Red Panda's back with a renewed passion.
She killed it last year.
Oh, okay. Because there were some worries about 4 years ago.
Oh, perfect performance last year at halftime in Cleveland.
I think even Bill Belichick at one point said there were diminished skills for the Red Panda.
All the balls landed on her head.
He's in a much different age bracket.
That's trouble. She's way too old for Bill Belichick these days. Daryl, it is a little different from being the plucky upstarts, the try-hard Cavs. It's a bit different from that to where I think the Cavs are the rest of the year because you got Stephen A. Smith after they crushed his New York Knicks. on Friday night saying,
all right, you know what?
That
now
they're
I'm
legit.
Worried.
You've got everybody saying they're legit now.
Now I'm really concerned. If Screamin' A is behind the Cavs, that might be the kiss of death.
Stephen A., by the way, fourth, if you're scoring at home on some of these overseas accounts, fourth by the numbers in charge for somebody that could be the Democratic nominee in 2000. What would it be? Is it 28? Yeah. Okay. Fourth. Would you put your money on him? That's a conversation for a different day. But when Stephen A. Smith
and a different station,
the national pundits are all starting to not only give your Cavs love, like it's one thing to say, whoa, they could pose a little bit of a threat to the Celtics. Like they're saying now the Celtics have to be worried.
Are you ready to not be the plucky upstarts anymore as a fan?
I mean, that was fun where you had no expectations, right. Win a bunch of regular season games.
Because I feel like I've been there since, you know, game 40 of the season this year.
Where, you've been where?
Where I'm no longer interested in being the plucky upstarts. It kind of sucks because it takes some of the fun out of the regular season for me. But I'm just expecting an NBA Finals appearance now.
It's a tough expectation to have because, like, Vegas still has you as the third best odds to win the championship. And it seems like still when I hear most, they're still saying the Celtics. If the Celtics play their game, they're going to win. But that's different from, hey, the Celtics are going to breeze their way to the NBA Finals. I'm not hearing anybody say that now.
No.
Like, the Cavs are now being factored into that discussion. Before, it was all Celtics. If they just stay healthy, it's them.
That's true. I mean, I watched what Kristaps did the last time we played him, and he did whatever he wanted to.
Yeah, he missed a bunch of shots, too.
Jaylen Brown did whatever he wanted to, and Jason Tatum did whatever he wanted to.
I mean, but
now... And then they went out and got DeAndre Hunter.
Now,
I feel totally different about the team, and I don't know why. Because
well,
it's
they
not
lost
like I thought
since
DeAndre
gotten.
Hunter was the next big thing in basketball, but he apparently is the next big thing on the roster as far as stretching out the defense and playing on the perimeter, and
well, still coming off the bench, too. And that seems to be a role that he's most comfortable in, and the Cavs are most comfortable having him in.
If Game 7's here in Cleveland, the Celtics are going home.
That's an official
decree, Daryl?
Book it.
So what changed? What happened?
I just believe in
have
the
you fe- well, how, I, long, I, have you, I how just, long have you felt this way?
Once they traded for DeAndre Hunter, it's over. Yeah, that was... Unlike Owen, for me, that was the over-the-top move because they needed somebody that could help them on the perimeter against a team like Boston. And once they made that trade, because as much as I like Caris LeVert and George Niang, like I don't think you're matching up with the Celtics the right way. Once they brought in DeAndre Hunter, I'm like, yeah, if Game 7... Now, if it's in Boston, I have a little different thought.
Yeah,
winning a Game 7 on the road is different. But
Game
7 here
Friday.
In Cleveland, Celtics are going home. Massive home floor advantage for the Cavaliers. Yeah.
You're down 2-1 in the series. Got a game on Friday. Have to win that game to keep this a true six-game. Well, it'd be a seven-game lead by then.
Or so, yeah.
Potentially more, depending how the rest of the week plays out. But
I am interested to see who actually plays Friday night, though, for both teams.
I said something to Owen off the air. If I'm Boston, and maybe they're just above this, but if you want to play mind games with the Cavs and not give the Cavs any kind of momentum, any confidence, I think I might give that game to the Cavs. I think I might not play. That might be a load management game if I'm Boston. Now, I don't think they're going to do that. I think they're too proud to get in the mud like I would.
Right.
But, you know, the Cavs, if they win that game on Friday and you're fully healthy and they're fully healthy, I mean, I think it's going to change a lot of the opinions because that last game won't mean anything where Boston kind of controlled that game coast to coast.
Kenny Atkinson's not going to hold back. That's just not his style.
No, I wouldn't say so either. No,
you know what I mean? He's going to, if they're available, he's going to play his guys. But I agree with you. Like, if I'm the Celtics, I might think about sitting a guy or two so that the Cavs can't get any...
Well, because they're not going to catch the Cavs now, right? I mean,
no.
Six games.
No.
Just looking at the schedule the rest of the way.
No.
Well, they're definitely not catching them. There'll be 23 games left after that for the Cavs. They're definitely not catching them if the Cavs have a seven-game lead.
Yeah.
And they don't hold the tiebreaker.
Yeah, with the Celtics, are the Celtics right now in their mind, are they conceding that they're probably not going to be the number one seed?
Well, that's fine. Let's go. Then I expect to be in the NBA Finals. If you already have a team conceding to you this point in the season, I expect NBA Finals.
Now, the Cavaliers, and I wonder where the fans are on this. 216-474-0092, because you're saying, Daryl, you're saying DeAndre Hunter changed it for you. Oh, and you basically been saying this for the better part of a month.
I didn't know how they were going to get it done. Because I watched them play head-to-head against that team, and it looked pretty scary. But at the same time, do I believe that Boston's going to be completely healthy come the end of May and June? I don't. I don't think that they have I don't believe that Kristaps is going to stay off the bench, which he was on the bench for the majority of that series last year.
Yes.
That was a little earlier in the season, though. One round earlier. But still, I just... my confidence is through the roof. It's ruined the it's not ruined the regular season, but it's taken some of the fervor out of the regular season for me. But that's okay. They're putting us on TNT tonight. I mean, against the Magic, against that first round matchup from last year, against the team that took us to seven games.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited about this game. You're 7.5-point favorites. I think Ken Carman's going to be in the crowd.
He better be. He's down there.
Is it a bad move? If Kenny, he's already got golf on the itinerary this week. Is his wife going to allow him to throw a few back and enjoy some Cavs hoops?
I think if he takes the
I'm going to be
him.
Looking for him in the crowd tonight.
Well, good seats available. I'm looking at the tickets. It's not bad.
Ken's not hard to miss in a crowd.
$25 get-in price down there. Do they still call it the O-Arena?
I have no idea what they call it.
The Amway Arena?
No, it's the Kia Center down there in Florida. All right, 216-474-0092. Are you guys like Daryl? Are you converted? The Cavaliers, have they gone from the hunter to the hunted? They have the best record in the NBA right now, and they have a national television game against a team that they had an absolute slugfest with. Seven-game war a season ago. Is that what you are expecting tonight? Ben and Acker, I want to get to this call because the Cavs are taking on the Celtics tonight, and we have been building this game up for a week, and I just don't know in Boston if they're building it up in the same way. We don't know if Jaylen Brown's going to play again. Are they ducking the high-powered Cavs right now? Ben and Akron, go ahead. What's going on? First of all, what stock will you put in tonight's game?
Well, it depends who plays. I think if both teams show with everyone up, then I'm taking a lot of stock in it. But I'm excited finally. I think DeAndre Hunter gives us a lot better shot against Boston. And I just want to know from you guys is how deep will our rotation go in the playoffs and especially against Boston, and who would that be in that rotation against them?
All right. Thank you, Ben. I have been somebody that's made quite the stink about getting Strus out of the starting lineup in a big series against the Celtics, but everybody continues to tell me it's not about who starts, it's about who finishes. Okay, so Tom, how does Kenny Atkinson deal? It's not like the regular season. We should know by now. We've been in amazing playoff runs where we can talk all we want about playing 10 guys, 11 guys. Once the playoffs start, look at the minutes last year. Not just the Cavs, by the way, in the big games against Orlando. It was down to, well, Donovan's playing 40 minutes. Darius is playing 40 minutes. Evan's playing close to 40 minutes. Like, things change come playoff time.
You can try to play 10, but you can only trust 7 or 8. You know, that bench is going to get squeezed. That's just the nature of the beast. Now,
Strus is hot.
It's going to, yeah.
Okay.
And it's going to go matchup to matchup. And Sam Merrill is going to be a wonderful guy to be able to bring in off the bench when you need an infusion of offensive energy, et cetera, et cetera. But Kenny's going to have to be, you know, he talks now about playing 10 or 11 in the playoffs. It's just not going to happen. We've seen this. It's been the mandate of the NBA since the beginning of the time. You're going to get into a series where, you know, you're going to have times where you're going to need somebody off the bench. There's going to be times somebody's going to get in foul trouble. There's going to be injuries. We've seen that over the years. So he can talk all he wants right now about a 10 or 11 man rotation. That's just not going to happen.
Donovan Mitchell, and this is, you can give Kenny Atkinson credit, or you can just give the fact that they're dominating, which, okay, that again could go back to Atkinson. He's playing 31 minutes a game. Okay, that is less than his rookie year in Utah way back in 2017. So just imagine if they are in a big series against Boston, you're going to assume these games. I know there are blowouts in the playoffs, But let's assume, for the sake of argument, that these are good games and the series goes 6 or 7, which I think is most likely a safe bet.
Yeah.
I mean, he's going to go from 31 minutes to 42.
Absolutely.
Like, a game could go to overtime, 43, 44. That is how the playoffs work, and that's not just a Cavs thing. That's not a Bickerstaff thing. I know people put that on Bickerstaff. You're not going to want Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum and Porzingis attacking your backups. You're going to want to go toe-to-toe.
You have to.
That's just how this works.
Can't let the game get away, right?
Imagine if all of a sudden there's 11, 12 minutes less for those role players and those bench players to play. That's what I think people need to remember how the playoffs work. And I think
it's a different,
that's what you're alluding to.
It's a different sport. Yeah, it's a more physical game, right? It's the strategy goes to another stratosphere. So I think what's been good in, and listen, the 15-0 start certainly allowed Kenny Atkinson to have any kind of leeway and leverage that he needed, right? I mean, that was imperative. But I like the way that he has developed trust from 1 through 11 or 12 on that bench. You know, everybody that comes off that bench, Ty Jerome has completely changed the way that that second unit looks. I mean, he could end up being a starter at some point. Who knows? You know, unfortunately, too, just because of the way the game is, somebody's going to get hurt between now and the playoffs. It's just the way it goes. It could be somebody that's going to...
Don't say that. I want to hear that.
I'm not saying the Cavs. I'm saying just in general. That's what happens, right? I mean, somebody gets their finger... Somebody smacks their finger on a ring, on the rim. You know, somebody turns an ankle, goes out for 2 weeks. It's going to happen. So it's good that he's been able to develop what he's got right now, which is wave after wave of Cavaliers.
All right. I don't know if you paid attention. Tom Withers is in for Ken Carman today, and he is a big hoops fanatic. I'm not sure if people are waking up or just kind of turning us on right now. We had some developments in the Western Conference, and I'll explain why this is applicable to our conversation. So the Lakers win last night. They beat the Timberwolves. The Lakers, don't look now. They're a 4 seed in the West. They're a game behind the Nuggets for the 3 seed. That LeBron James character, how old is he again, Tom?
67.
He had 33 points, 17 assists, 6 assists, 17 rebounds, 6 assists. He had a block and a steal. LeBron looks motivated, which is very scary, I think, for the rest of the Western Conference. And Golden State, they came back down from a big, big deficit to beat Orlando on the road. Steph Curry had 56 points. We have been starved in this league, and I think the network execs, the commissioner, the people that talk about the game, we have been starved to get a new face of the NBA. And yet, just when you thought Steph was done, because he was having one of the worst years of his career, just when you thought LeBron was done, both of them have been revitalized.
The two Akron kids.
With some trades. Yeah, right, right, same hospital, right? The Jimmy Butler trade, that has changed the dynamic with Golden State. The Luka trade has changed the dynamic with the Lakers. And so there's been this big conversation about who is going to seize a grip on face of the league. Anthony Edwards said he didn't want it. And then LeBron James, yesterday, he's talking to Dave McMenamin in his locker. And it's very strategic when LeBron wants to talk about these things. Listen to LeBron talk about the face of the league.
I mean, Channing Frye said it the other day. I mean, it's unfortunate, but like, why do you want to be the face of a league when all the people that cover our game and talk about our game on a day-to-day basis on everybody? It's just weird. It's weird energy. Channing, he said it. He said it perfectly. Couldn't say it no better. But Ant said he don't want it. Obviously, I didn't ask for it, but I knew it was a responsibility for me, not only to my family, my friends, my community, and whoever that was going to follow my journey throughout my career. I feel Ant. I understand. I completely understand. This is weird energy when it comes to that. So.
Hi, Tom. I've considered you at times to be the biographer of LeBron James. You need to get paid on these things, by the way. You've covered him as close as anybody from his high school days.
What a weird answer.
It was a bizarre answer.
Yeah, it was all over the place,
he says
too.
He didn't want it.
Yeah.
He had chosen one, you know, tattooed on his back.
Exactly, right.
Like he
craved it.
And that's why he is legendary. That's why he's a billionaire. That's why he's going to own an NBA team. That's why... the guy could do whatever he wants.
Yeah, and I didn't hear Channing Frye's comments, but I disagree with LeBron from the standpoint that the people that cover the league are not giving those guys a hard time on a day-to-day basis. We're praising them. Yeah, are you going to get dissected? Are you going to get analyzed for the way you play? Of course you are. That's sports. So, you know, welcome to the arena. Mr. In the Arena, LeBron, right? I mean, I love the guy. Don't get me wrong. I've, you know, been fortunate enough to have been there from day one with him. But my question to you, Anthony, I asked you earlier, since when does the NBA need a face of the league? Like, why is that such an important thing? I don't, you know, you think about those years with Magic and Bird and Jordan, there were several faces of the league. And I think that's what you have now. And I don't think we've had, this is a time now where we have as many, engaging superstars as we've ever had in the game, right? There's every team seems to have one of those guys. I mean, Donovan Mitchell, I could argue, could be one of those faces of the league. There's plenty of them. So I don't think it has to necessarily be, branded on one player. I think that's almost unfair.
NBA's in a weird spot because it does get a lot of criticism, and there are myriad reasons for it. From load management, you know, you don't know who you're going to see on a given night. A lot of people did not
buyer
like,
beware.
People did not like how political people got in the league.
Fair.
During a time when there was a lot of political unrest. They've obviously, a lot of that has gone away, but there were a lot of reasons that people were done with the NBA.
It's a 3-point shooting contest now is another like newer
not
argument.
A lot of
variance. Like, yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
More blowouts than ever before because of that. And yet they signed an 11-year, $76 billion deal, a deal that baseball would thank the heavens if they could get a deal, even a fraction of that.
Right.
So, like, financially, the league is in great shape. They've got some of the richest people owning their teams. They're flush with cash. Superstars are going to be making $70 million a year. Here, when it comes to contracts,
you've got mid-markets like Oklahoma City and Cleveland as arguably the two best teams in the league right now.
Got six champions in 6 years.
Unbelievable, yeah.
Could be seven.
It's in a good place.
That's what I'm saying. It is in a great place in that regard. But the way people talk about the league, and is LeBron just, is he staring at Inside the NBA? Is he staring at the bloggers? Is he staring at Charles Barkley? Because, yeah, there is a double standard there. There are people that are ready. Like Joel Embiid had one of the greatest seasons statistically in NBA history a few years ago, won an MVP, and people just make fun of him, even though it's his body that's failed him. Like, it is weird how we don't talk about Josh Allen that way.
No, and LeBron,
and he hasn't won a Super Bowl.
Right, and LeBron also got himself caught up in that little stupid argument over who owns Christmas Day or not. Like, does it really matter? I mean, we're all sitting at home watching the games, whether it's an NFL game or an NBA game. Who cares? And the TV ratings, why is that such a big deal? So, yeah, I don't really know where LeBron's coming from on this. I certainly don't think Anthony Edwards would be the face of the league anyway. I mean, really nice player. Don't get me wrong.
You have to actually play both halves without being ejected.
Yeah, you can't, right. You can't get kicked out of 16 games and potentially be facing a suspension and be the face of the league. So, yeah, it's an interesting argument. I just don't know where LeBron's coming from on it.
The Ringer 100 just came out, and Cavs fans will love this because four of their players are in the top 50. We have Howard Beck from The Ringer coming up at 9 o'clock. Now, you said face of the league. Jokic is number one. Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, number two. Giannis, number three. They have Tatum, four, and Luka, five. So four of your top five are foreign players. But I don't really think that impacts the NBA.
Not at all.
The way it might in baseball. There's not a communication gap. You don't need translators. These stars all speak the King's English. Like, they have no problem communicating to their fans. And look at their Instagram account. Somebody told me the other day that Kyle Kuzma has more Instagram followers than Aaron Judge. Okay, Kyle Kuzma.
Interesting.
Like, that shows you the NBA
marketing machine.
Is still, and I just said Kyle Kuzma and stardom in the same sentence. It doesn't belong. They have Steph and LeBron 6 and 7, so there's a little bit of reactionary because those haven't been the 6 and 7 best players in the league, but they're coming on strong. So Donovan Mitchell, number 8. This is the highest he's ever been, and Donovan has had the rap on him, never been out of the second round. I mean, this team, they are poised to make a significant run. So
eight,
I think Cavs
by the way,
fans,
eight sounds about right, don't you think?
He's ahead of Kevin Durant this year.
Absolutely.
They have Wemby at 10, Anthony Edwards at 9. Okay, now we go further down. They have Evan Mobley at 16th overall. That is awesome to hear because he is gaining ground on the rest of the league.
I mean, was he last year? Probably in the 30s
yes,
or 40s.
He was.
What do you think? Yeah.
He's had a unicorn.
No question.
A bunch of unicorn games lately if you look at the box score. I think this is exciting for fans as well. You have Darius Garland at 25. So Darius is creeping up. He has been in the running for all NBA. And then finally, Jared Allen, who you got to go down to 48. So he cracked the top 50. I think that's awesome. I think that is awesome because I have said all year that the Cavs would debunk a lot of kind of ironclad things, narratives that we have about what it takes to be a champion in the NBA with the two small guards. Well, they can debunk that.
Debunked, yeah.
Not having a top five player. They can almost every team that you can argue about Jason Tatum last year. But the Celtics and Tatum, and now they have them in their top five. So they can debunk a lot of that. Do you think the Cavs could be this team? I know we're in Cleveland, and we don't have a LeBron James. Could they be a team that could become kind of the face of the NBA, especially if they break through and contend for a championship this year?
Well, yeah, and especially the way they play, right? It's a likable style, and it's a likable team, right? I mean, these are a bunch of good guys, and I'm not just saying that because I cover them. And
nobody hate-watches the Cavs like they do
the Celtics,
Harden over the years.
Or the Knicks. Yes. Yeah. The Pistons, like all those kinds of teams. This is a very likable group. I think Kenny Atkinson is a very likable coach. I think there's a lot of people outside of Cleveland, and I know this for a fact, that pull for Cleveland. That want to see,
believe it or not,
that want to see good things happen in Cleveland. And I think it's fascinating. And Anthony, you and I talked about it very briefly yesterday. But could you imagine this builds up to a Cavs versus Lakers final?
Don't threaten me with the most amazing time ever, Tom Withers. All right. A different team with Suggs. 40-point win. Humble in victory.
Oh, man.
They go from getting blown out. Matt Darien for Ken Carmen, and we're about to go out to the hotline, North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. Welcome in Justin Termini, Sirius XM NBA Radio. But, Matt, humble in victory after a 40-point dominating win against a team that blew you out twice last year in Orlando. I'm supposed to be humble, Matt?
Talk your trash. Anthony, you got to do it, man. This team's dominant.
All right.
Dominant.
All right, let's welcome in Justin Termini, Sirius XM NBA Radio right now. Now, I was on his show a few weeks ago, maybe 3 weeks ago, right before the Boston game, and that didn't go so well. And then they added, well, a pretty significant player by the name of DeAndre Hunter. And since then, they have not lost. They have another one of these huge win streaks developing. When are they ever going to lose again? Justin, we're just winning too much right now with the Cleveland Cavs.
Yeah, you are, and they're championship worthy. I mean, you mentioned since the last time they talked, they added DeAndre Hunter, and that's kind of what we said they needed, right? Is they needed some wing length to go up against Boston, who's got a ton of it. They've got two small guards, this Cleveland. We mentioned that. Typically, you don't win a championship that way, but Ty Jerome's a nice step in kind of covering up for that a little bit. I should say DeAndre Hunter's a nice step in cleaning that up a little bit.
All right, so I want to hear, because you're in Boston, and you're certainly somebody that follows the Celtics very closely. We all understand the Celtics are not going all out in this regular season. But with that said, I mean, they find themselves six games behind the Cavs. If there were a seventh game in the Eastern Conference Finals, they would have to come into Cleveland to win. What is the confidence level of that Boston community right now, knowing that the Cavs just seem to be getting stronger?
Well, one, I wouldn't say that they're not going all out in like regards to the minutes. Like, you look at the minutes that they're playing their stars in Cleveland compared to what they're playing in Boston. I mean, Joe Mazzulla is really pushing guys like Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown who don't sit, and they play well over 30 minutes a game. Cleveland doesn't do that. So you could say they're not pushing it, but in regards to the toll it's taking on their bodies, I think they are more so than Cleveland. In regards to the confidence level, I think if you probably asked that question maybe 3 weeks ago, there'd be some questions. I don't think there are right now. Now, because as good as Cleveland is, if you look what's going on in Boston, Boston's starting to round into form right now. You're getting guys like Derek White who are playing a lot better. Porzingis has been rolling here as of late. This might be the best basketball that Jason Tatum has ever played in his entire career, especially as a playmaker. So I don't think there's any lack of confidence in Boston right now. I think probably what there is in Boston is the realization that they're going to have to go through a team in Cleveland that they just didn't have to in the Eastern Conference last year.
JT, you look at the addition of DeAndre Hunter. What does that mean for your outlook on the Cavs, and how much better does that make them in the East?
Well, it makes them significantly better because that's the one thing that they were missing was length on the perimeter, a guy that could defend a guy like Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown and slow him down a little bit. And also, like, Boston had a guy coming off the bench in Peyton Pritchard who, to me, was running away with the sixth man of the year, probably still wins it because, one, he's deserving, but, two, it's like a narrative thing, and it seems like the media gave it to him maybe a month into the season. But if there's a guy that would be number two on that list, it's probably Hunter. So not only did you get a guy that can defend on the perimeter and give you some length, you got a guy that coming off the bench easily could go bucket for bucket with a guy like Peyton Pritchard. So I've been saying this the last couple of weeks is a lot of people have said like maybe Leon Rose is the executive of the year because he did make the splashy moves with Bridges and Karl Anthony Towns. To me, I would probably look more towards Kobe Altman because they needed something and he got the perfect fit at the deadline.
Boy, it's funny. We're joined by Justin Termini that you could win Executive of the Year just rolling back the same group that had not had much playoff success. And that's exactly what happened. We were in a lot of heated debates about what to do with this team. And I don't think anybody saw Darius Garland not only having an all-star year, but he's been unimpeachable. He's been one of the best point guards in the NBA, and you pair that up with what Ty Jerome, there's almost no drop-off when they go to the bench with Ty Jerome. Could this Cavs team be the team with the small guards in the starting lineup that actually pierces through?
Yeah, so one, like you mentioned, the executive of the year just by standing pat, I think sometimes in the NBA that's something that's hard to do. You look at all these other teams where it's like they just want to fidget with things if there's like even something that's a little bit off. And you look at like Minnesota, that got them in trouble when they went to the conference finals last year and they had to get smart about it. Now, I know that was financially motivated as well, but Phoenix went to the finals, then they won 64 games and they had a young core and they're still like, hey, you know what, let's blow up a team that did that in back-to-back seasons and ship out all these young guys for the shiny toy and Kevin Durant. Doesn't always work out. Like, continuity is a really important thing. Look at how many years it took Boston to get over the hump with essentially the same core of Tatum and Brown, you know, and Al Horford. Now, they did make the Jrue Holiday and Porzingis trades, but the point is they kept those guys together. So I think that, you know, that's one of the reasons they've been successful is the continuity. I think this is a big enough sample size where you could say, like, this team could be the one that gets through with the small guards, especially, again, because they have DeAndre Hunter now. They got two bigs behind him protecting him who are great defensively. Evan Mobley now with the Wembanyama injury, in my book as a voter, is probably the defensive player of the year if I decide to go big. If I decide to go small, I might go Dyson Daniels. They've got a legitimate shot.
You just mentioned Mobley, and yeah, the defense is unreal and the rim protection, but could you see a scenario where he's all NBA second team, third team, pretty damn soon?
Yeah, I mean, you could do it this year, especially with some of the, like, and if other forwards that are going up against are like, Kevin Durant, who's just, you know, on a very talented team and they're not winning at all, like, why wouldn't Evan Mobley maybe get a nod over a guy like Kevin Durant? Plus, if you're the defensive player of the year and you're also contributing offensively like he does, I mean, the defense has got to account for something. I think a guy like Durant's on the 27th worst defense in the NBA on a team that's not winning. Meanwhile, Mobley's, you know, the defensive anchor on a top 10 defense that's on the precipice of winning 67, 68 games. I could see a scenario here where he's, you know, maybe not, he's not going to be first team all NBA, at least for me, because I vote by position, even though they changed that rule and you would go Giannis and Tatum at the forward position. But yeah, you could probably make an argument that he's second or, you know, at the very least third team.
Like Ty Jerome last night, I think he had like 21 points in 20 minutes. He's had a number of these types of games. He's red hot again. And he's actually, if you go by PER for shooting guards in the NBA, he's only behind one player. It's Donovan Mitchell. He's number two in the NBA. What kind of a payday could Ty Jerome be getting? And knowing that the caveat is there aren't a ton of teams with cap space. That's what Cavs fans are praying for, that all the other teams have so little space that Jerome will just have to re-sign with the Cavs. But I'm afraid that he's playing his way into a different strata, that there's no way the Cavs are capped at what they can even offer him.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those Bruce Brown situations from a couple of years ago, right, where Cleveland's capped at what they could give him, and then Bruce Brown was capped at what they gave him in Denver, even though maybe he wanted to stay there. And it could just take, like, one team like Indiana, where they threw $20-plus million at Bruce Brown. You can keep him, but it also doesn't help you keep him when Kenny Atkinson, I saw, is, like, comparing him to Steph Curry the other day, where he's like, he sometimes can give you those Steph Curry minutes, but it's true. He can light things up quickly, you know, and if you have a guy like that that's able to give you 20 points off the bench, you know, in any given game. I mean, it's a consistent thing. Last night, he was amazing again against one of the better defenses in the NBA. Now, granted, as you mentioned, they didn't have Suggs, and they have been a different team without Suggs, Orlando, in fairness to them. His injury seems like it's bigger than that of Banchero and Franz Wagner from earlier the year. But, you know, if he does it in the postseason in a couple of the big spots, then certainly it's going to be hard to keep him. But, again, just like with Bruce Brown in Denver, you'll take it because it could result in a championship if he's doing this.
Could we get a scenario, JT, where Friday night, obviously Boston's hosting the Cavs. It's an ESPN game. Boston's got to play tonight in Detroit. And this is almost like the Pistons' Super Bowl here because they've won seven in a row. Is there a scenario Friday where Celtics might lose and people say, well, it's three games in four nights. Could you see that?
Yeah, I mean, because that happens all the time. There's always going to be excuses. Now, and I also saw where Jaylen Brown last night was dealing with a bruised quad. So clearly, if he doesn't play, then I think that throws a little bit of a monkey wrench into it as well. And we also know, I mean, we've all been covering the league long enough that, you know, you do have different schedules throughout the course of the regular season. That's not going to be something that is the case in the postseason, like where everybody's playing the same exact schedule. But I think we already know what this series kind of looks like. It's the same thing with like a Knicks-Cavs or a Knicks-Celtics series. We know what it looks like. Like if New York goes out there, and I don't know if New York plays Cleveland one more time, but would you guys, if New York happened to beat Cleveland the next time they play, go, oh my God, now I don't feel comfortable about this matchup? I mean, the Celtics, I think, have beat them by at least 13 points in three games this year. Is Boston going to go out there if New York wins the final time they meet and go, oh no, now I'm nervous about this matchup? I think that we didn't learn anything. We're not going to learn anything new about Knicks, Cavs, Knicks, Celtics, and we're not going to learn anything about the Cavs and the Celtics. They played a couple of close games so far this year, and I think that's what it's going to be like in the postseason as well.
Yeah, Justin, I'm with you there. Matt scoffed at it earlier when I brought it up, but I'm wondering if there are going to be any Joe Mazzulla mind games on Friday, especially because they have Denver Nuggets on Sunday. It's a matinee, obviously a national televised game that they're going to want to get up for that. And I almost wonder if, yeah, you'd think, okay, they'd want to get up for it for the Cavs. But right now, you know, they've been kind of in the Cavs' minds. And could this be a situation where they rest guys on Friday because they don't want to give the Cavs confidence going into the postseason with DeAndre Hunter?
I mean, we've seen that with, like, Popovich in the past and stuff like that. Would it be maybe a wise decision? I guess it could be. Here's what I would say about that. Again, not knowing what Jaylen Brown's health is going to be over the course of the next week because he is banged up, is that Jason Tatum, if you like follow the way that he just approaches things, he's one of the better stars in the league in regards to, like, he wants to play every single night. He's not one of these guys that is like sitting out even lesser games, even though maybe Boston fans would like him to. He's the guy that plays in even the, you know, as he pointed out, like against Charlotte on the road on a Tuesday night, even if he's a little bit banged up, like that's his argument of being like in the MVP conversation on the periphery of it, like first team all NBA, is that he might not be as talented as Jokic, Giannis, Jokic, Giannis, I think he's as good as Shai Gilgeous Alexander, but his argument is like, I play every single night, right? And it's just over the volume of numbers instead of the per game stuff. So I don't think Boston's the type of team that does that type of thing. And I hope they're not, because for the league's sake, you want to see a big game like that.
You and Eddie Johnson do a great job on the your afternoon show. I know you got to look at all the
teams. No, Matt, no, don't do this with Justin.
He doesn't even like Eddie on the afternoon show. Yeah, I do a good job on the afternoon show.
We know Scal and Frank don't like Eddie. We know that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, most of us don't like Eddie, so it's not like that's going on with a limb.
Oh my gosh! But like, you look and you see the Cavs' path and what could be a championship run. Who is there? Anybody in the East? Is it Indiana? Is it any of these other teams that you go, man, they could give the Cavs a run other than Boston?
No, it's just Boston. It's a two man, like in the Western Conference. There's a bunch of teams that could do it, right? It's pretty simple in the Eastern Conference. It's Boston and Cleveland. And that's the other thing with all this talk about, oh, well, the Western Conference is so much tougher. I think I've talked about this with Tony this year in the past. No, it's not. The tougher conference is the Eastern Conference because there's two high-level championship contenders, whereas Oklahoma City might have to go through more depth in the Western Conference, say in the first round, maybe in the second round. But there's not that like juggernaut that's waiting for him in the conference finals. It's just the Cavs and the Celtics. And to me, like, I'd have to go back and look this up, and maybe I will for the show today, like the pace that they're on, right? If they both continue on this pace, when's the last time that we've had a conference finals when it's been two teams that, you know, say Boston wins like 63, 64 games and Cleveland wins 68, 69. That's going to be one of the better conference finals that we've seen in quite some time.
All right, final question, Justin Termini, SiriusXM NBA Radio. Are we living in a world where the Lakers and LeBron James with Luka could actually get to the NBA Finals?
I think they can, which has me ticked off, but as a guy that's, you know, never going to root for LeBron, because, I mean, you tell me, Tony, is this supporting cast that he has in L.A. any worse than the supporting cast that he had in Dallas last year where they went all the way to the NBA Finals?
Right, I mean, and the way that once they get into a playoff series, I think that's where they get even better. Like, that's what I get nervous about now. But I shouldn't say nervous because it would be awesome to have a potential either Cavs-LeBron final or obviously Boston LeBron, but here in Cleveland, I mean, I can't even fathom what 2 weeks would be like with LeBron coming back to Cleveland.
Man. Well, first of all, like, it would be, I think it would be more Lakers Celtics than LeBron Celtics, although the LeBron like storyline there with Boston is great as well. But I can tell you, I can kind of imagine it'd be a lot of LeBron like taking credit for what's going on in LA right now, also laying the foundation for what went on in Cleveland. So he'd almost be like, either way, it's about me. Either way, I win. So I already kind of know what it'd be like in a finals against the Cavs and the Lakers.
Justin, we're going to do this again. Cavs just continue to roll. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, and hey, listen, Cleveland's one of my favorite cities, especially like that time of year in June, so I prefer to be in Boston as a Celtic guy, but either way, both of those cities, Boston and Cleveland, like I consider Cleveland Northeast type of like sports town, I'd love to be out there for a finals.
All right, there he is, Justin Termini on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. We thank you for coming out. Plenty to react to there. He sees a world where it could be Cavs versus LeBron, Luka, and the Lakers in the NBA Finals. To talk about that and so much more, appearing on North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline, we welcome in the always entertaining Carl Dukes. You can hear him right here on the Infinity Sports Network. Also, 92.9 The Game does that podcast with Jason Lockenfora, Brian Baldinger. Carl, we're so happy to have you on. What's up, man?
Fellas, what's going on? Good morning. How you guys doing?
Good morning.
Yeah, Carl, we're obviously talking Myles Garrett because yesterday more reporting came out that not only does he want out, he is not even willing to have the conversation about an extension. So it's not just about the money, at least here, according to the reporting. Carl, does Myles Garrett truly have some leverage in this situation?
Well, fellas, look, we know in sports, it doesn't matter in the NBA, it doesn't matter if it's the NFL, when stars want out, they can force their hand. And this is Miles putting his foot down and saying, look, I know this is your only option to give me an extension, give me more money and appease me. I don't want that. And this, to me, is the final step for him to say, look, it doesn't matter what you guys are trying to do here. I still want out. So, yes, I do think this is him trying to force their hand even more so. As far as the leverage guys, look, the Browns have the leverage. If they get a great deal from some team that's not a contender, they have to at least explore it and look at it, if, in fact, he wants out as much as we think he does. So, you know, this idea that he can, for example, go to any contender that he wants to, that's not the case. I mean, the Browns still have the leverage there, but the leverage in his hands right now is simply that he can force their hands to make a deal.
All right, Carl, so if you're the Atlanta Falcons, what kind of package are you putting together for the Browns to get Myles Garrett?
Two first, a couple of future picks, and whatever else you want, because the Falcons are desperate to get a guy like this, and I think most teams are. Guys, it starts, and the history shows us in the National Football League, when you have a player like this, whether it's a star, elite safety, or it's an edge rusher, you're giving up two first-round picks. So that's the starting point. Then from there, where do you go? The Browns could get a haul. This is not going to be the Cowboys in 89 where they get, you know, 12 picks for Herschel Walker, but you could definitely get a haul that could help you grow your team and certainly get you much better for the future. But the Falcons or any team that's in need of an edge rusher, you're giving up at least two first and much more.
Put them up! Carl Dukes right now on the hotline. So, Carl, when you think about the rest of the NFL, like one team to me, I heard a lot of people saying the Eagles would be the team. I don't think the Eagles make sense because they've almost been like Golden State in basketball, you know, 8 years ago, safety and or strength in numbers. Like their whole thing is that we have all these guys on the line. We come at you in waves. But if you go with Myles Garrett, it depletes everything else. What teams do you think make sense for the Myles Garrett sweepstakes?
Well, look, the Eagles, only the reason why I think people are talking about the Eagles, Anthony and Tom, is simply because Howie Roseman has been so bold in the things that he's done. And they are right now, right in their window to not only repeat, but to probably be a Super Bowl contender for the next 4 years or so with all of these guys, many of them still under rookie deals. The defense is still really good. How much better does it look? So I think that's why people are talking about this, is simply because they know that they're about to lose one of their defensive pieces. And what makes sense is, okay, well, let's just replace him and we can put Myles Garrett in there. How much better are we? As far as other teams around the league, look, I think this is the premier free or premier potential trade that could happen this offseason, if in fact it does. And again, we get back to, if the Browns keep saying, I heard Andrew Berry, you know, at the combine, I got friends up there. They're like, look, I talked to Berry and he is saying there's no way in hell they're moving this guy. I hear him, but I also think this is bluffing. You know, you can't play your hand right now until you hear potential deals that are on the table. Everybody says the Browns aren't going to make this move. Well, he takes a phone call and somebody offers an incredible package. You can't turn that down. But I think there are multiple teams, Anthony and Tom, to answer your question. I don't think there's like two teams. I think this could be easily 5 to 6 teams that could be interested, that could truly afford him. When you talk about once you get him now, what are you doing? Well, you got to pay him. And so that's the other part of this. It's not just wanting him. It's also how much are you under the cap and what can you do moving forward?
And Carl, from the Falcons standpoint, you've got a trade situation potentially with Michael Penix's emergence at the end of the season. Kirk Cousins has become the man on the outside, if you will. What's going on with that situation there? Are they willing to hang on to him as an expensive backup right now?
Fellas, what a mess. What a mess this is. I mean, seriously, like, you know, nobody anticipated that it would turn out this way. And then Cousins goes during the Super Bowl and makes his rounds and says, oh, yeah, I was hurt, which all season long, everybody, including me, asked him, are you hurt, Kirk? No, I'm fine, man. I'm just, you know, I'm trying to struggle through it and blah, blah, blah. He lied. And so now you have a situation that a guy embarrassed the franchise because he wasn't forthcoming with an injury that ultimately hurt his team. He threw 9 interceptions in a 5-week period that basically tanked the season. They were 6-3 and should have won 10 or 11 games, and instead they were out of the playoffs. So now you have a guy that's on the books, and you're going, what are we going to do with him? If they cut him before, right as the league year starts on March 12th, you're talking about $65 million cap hit. Nobody wants to do that. If you cut him post June 1, you're talking about 2 years, okay, 25, 40 million and 25 or whatever it is over the next 2 years, you're still hurting yourself. So the Falcons have said, look, we're happy with him being on the roster because we had this slated in our on our books as far as him being here. We didn't expect him to be the backup, but nobody pays a backup quarterback $40 million, guys. So this is a mess, and to answer your question, they are going to try to trade him. It's just who is willing to make a move like that when you don't have to. There's no team in the NFL and no general manager, as dumb as we think some of these guys are, that are going to pay for Kirk Cousins when, in fact, the Falcons can cut him and you can get him for little of nothing. So unless you absolutely are desperate to find a veteran who you think can still play, and I think Kirk was hurt. I do think it affected his play. I don't know how much, you know, better he's going to be next season, but this is right now a fiasco that the Falcons are trying to figure out. And the worst case scenario is to have him on the roster when the season starts and you're paying a backup $40 million.
I mean, this was the biggest Kirk Cousins takedown in the history of Cousins. I mean, this guy is a favorite of the media. He did the reality show on Netflix. Everybody loved it. He puts his hard hat on. And here Carl Dukes comes on our radio show, a blistering takedown of Cousins.
Well, look, personally, here's the deal. He got here, and everybody was vibing with him. What we didn't know in Atlanta was that his wife is from here. We knew that, but we didn't know how much time he had spent here. So he had a vibe. I mean, he was trying to embrace the city and certainly embrace the fan base, and everybody was like, this is cool. Then the guy throws for 500 yards in an overtime win against the Bucks, and everybody goes bananas and says, look, this guy was swag surfing with the crowd. He's our dude. We got a guy. And then it went bad, fellas. Then it went bad. All of a sudden, the play decreased. The interceptions went up. He was not making the reads that he needed to make. And all of a sudden, he looked like a damn rookie. So you say, hey, what's going on? And instead of being honest, this is all Kirk Cousins had to do. Look, guys, I'm hurt. I'm going to sit out a couple of weeks. I'm going to try to get better. In the meantime, I'm going to give my team a chance to win. But you know what? Anthony and Tom, he was afraid of what ultimately happened. He was afraid that he was going to lose his job to Michael Penix, and he kept playing and hurting his team. That, my friend, is not a good teammate.
Wow. Hey, we love talking about quarterbacks here in Cleveland, Carl. This quarterback's class, which was not getting flying colors even before Indy, is now being scrutinized and dissected once again. What are your thoughts on this group? I know a lot of people are talking about, you know, Ward and Sanders being at the top of this class, but overall, what do you see as the depth of this quarterback class in 2025?
Fellas, I think it's average. I really like Shador Sanders. It has nothing to do with his dad. Look, his dad is one of the coolest people on the planet, but at the end of the day, is he going to be able to lead a franchise and be a franchise-type quarterback? Cam Ward, Shador at the top of the draft, right? I really like Jackson Dart, but none of these guys, in my opinion, and the folks that I'm talking to and the scouts and draft experts are saying, look, this is an average class. And because of that, you could see, you know, other guys being picked potentially before a bunch of these quarterbacks are taken. This is not going to be last year where you got six in the first 15. And a lot of people say, look, if Bo Nix was in this draft this year, he'd be picked before, you know, a bunch of these guys. So I feel like right now, based on what we know, this is an average class. You have to have a real conviction that whomever you're taking, whether it's Cam Ward or it's going to be Shador at the top of this draft, that you really believe in what they can become. But I will tell you, Jaden Daniels, way better than any of these guys as he came into the league, and then he proved it. I believe Caleb Williams, you know, bad offensive line and all the things that he was dealing with in Chicago. He'll get past that from a talent standpoint, better than these guys. So when you start looking at Michael Penix, better than these guys. So I just think this is an average class when you start saying quarterbacks, but that doesn't mean that they won't grow into potentially great players. I just don't think they have the upside that we've seen over the last few years with the quarterbacks.
Carl Dukes, we air you times here on the Affinity Sports Network. Do such a great job down in Atlanta, 92.9 The Game. Thank you for coming on, man. Great perspective, and we'll make sure that Cousins' family doesn't get a chance to hear any of this.
He knows I've been killing him. Hey, fellas, put him up. Thank you, guys.
There you go, Carl Dukes.
Thanks, Carl.
There he is. Thanks for coming on, man. Terrific job breaking it down. I thought it was really interesting, some of the things he was talking about when it came to leverage and Myles Garrett.
To agree to that.
We're going to continue to be talking about. But to join us now and to discuss many of the topics that we have been apparently ill-informed on throughout today's show. Mary Kay Cabot, plain dealer, Cleveland.com, appearing on North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Now, Mary Kay, want to let everybody know things have gotten a little dangerous in the Indy community. We have a verbal assault from two different sports newsmakers. Football reporters got into it at a Starbucks. Jordan Schultz and Ian Rappaport. We've had both of those individuals on our radio station before, and I believe on this show. Mary Kay, what did you see, and whose side are you on?
Well, the first thing that comes to my mind, my first instinct was, unless somebody ended up with a black eye or got punched in the nose or knocked out or something like that, it just, a verbal altercation just didn't really do much for me. So that was the first thing. I thought that that it was a little bit maybe blown out of proportion to get to the point where you have to call security and all of those kinds of things. But maybe not. I could be wrong about that. But, you know, I've been in this business for a long time. I've seen a lot of different things, and a verbal assault is certainly not the worst of things that I've seen throughout the years.
What is your favorite verbal assault you've been involved in then, Mary Kay?
Oh, I've been in plenty of verbal assaults. but no, I mean, it's a high intensity business. It's extremely competitive. I was just thinking too this morning, I was thinking that, The NFL Combine is a test of strength, perseverance, just all of these things, and that's only the media navigating the bar scene at night.
I so love that. I hope these stories are going to be in your book, Mary Kay.
Maybe someday. We'll see. But, yeah, the fact that those guys dominated the news cycle last night, I don't know. I just kind of thought it was a little bit funny, actually.
All right, Mary Kay Cabot joining us from the Combine in Indy. It seems like every day there's a new big story that's going to impact the Browns. Well, one we're reacting to right now is this Abdul Carter situation and his foot injury. What do you know about that, and how serious would it have to be for the Browns to be thinking differently at number two if he's available?
Well, it does probably impact the top of the draft if people look at this as something that they have to worry about the beginning of the season, if he's going to undergo surgery. And I think he's at the point right now where he's still deciding if he's going to have the surgery and when. Should he do his pro day first and then have the surgery? Seems to me that you would just want to go ahead and get that done as soon as you possibly could. So a stress fracture shouldn't be something that completely rattles and shakes the top of the draft. But it is something that I think will give some people maybe a little bit of pause.
Mary Kay, if and I know what Kevin had to say about this quarterback class, and I'm sure we'll get to that coming up in a minute here, but if this quarterback class were considered, I think, widely to be better, would we still be talking about Abdul Carter as a top of the draft, like first overall pick type of player? Or is this partially the result of Cam Ward and Shedeur Sanders maybe aren't totally, you know, locks to be franchise type quarterbacks?
Well, I do think that that has a lot to do with it. If there were a surefire, clear cut number one, number two, number three quarterback that people felt great about the way that they did last year, then you probably wouldn't be talking about Abdul as the number one overall pick, because quarterbacks always have a premium in the first round. So I do think that that has something to do with it. But even though he is being talked about as the number one overall pick, I still have to wonder about that. I still would have to think, is someone going to jump up to number one and grab one of the quarterbacks? There's not a general consensus on these quarterbacks, that's for sure. But a quarterback is still a quarterback, and you pay for that.
Mary Kay is with us from the Combine, all sorts of news developing there. If you were to get a sense, based on everybody you're talking to, if it played out that Abdul Carter goes number one, is it an easy decision for the Browns to run up to the podium and take Cam Ward too, or would you be hesitant to say that?
Well, I would think that that's probably what would happen there, but I don't know that. They're doing a great, great job of keeping it really close to the vest on who they like and what they like about these two quarterbacks, Cam and Shedeur. Do they like them equally well? I think they're still in the fact-finding mission of trying to figure out, is the player the right, not just scheme fit, because that's not it. It's just, is he the right person to lead your particular organization and be the face of your franchise? Because the Browns have had a lot of issues at quarterback, and we all know that, over the last how many ever years. It's been a lot of drama, and they haven't gotten much bang for their buck on the field from their quarterbacks in recent years. So they need to get it right, not just from arm strength and mobility and those kinds of things, but they need to know that they are choosing the right leader to take this team to the next level. And I think that's part of the process that is still ongoing.
I know that it is early in this process, but if the Browns, in an ideal world for the Cleveland Browns, what would they prefer the Tennessee Titans do at number one overall?
Well, I think in a perfect world, the Browns would like to have, I would think, both of those top two quarterbacks available to them at number two so they could choose the one that they like the best and they're not left with something that they were forced to take because their favorite guy was gone at number one. So ideally for them, someone will be gone at number one and they can still have their choice of Cam and Shador at number two.
All right, Mary Kay, you got a chance to catch up with not only Kevin Stefanski, but Andrew Berry over the last few days. It seems like they're resolute, at least right now, when it comes to the Myles Garrett trade demands. Myles has kind of gone quiet. What is the next step here? Because if they are doubling and tripling down that they have no intention to trade him, Berry going so far as to say that they can't imagine a world where he's anywhere else. You know, how does that news hit with somebody like Myles Garrett?
Well, I think they're at the point now where it's sort of between the agent and between the Browns. I think it's up to Andrew Berry to sit down with Nicole Lynn and see if they can't hammer out an extension that would change Miles's mind and make him the highest paid defensive player in the NFL. I think that's the next order of business for them. And also, simultaneously, I would think that you have to show him, here's what we're looking at quarterback, here's why we're excited about this, and then it all starts to come together. So in my mind, that's the next step. And who knows? I don't know if they're meeting here in Indy, but I wouldn't be surprised if they were having conversations about that right now.
So with those conversations and the plan that they would have to lay out then too, I think, to get Miles to agree to that, because, you know, making him the highest paid defensive player is nice, but it does sound like he wants more than that. Is there a plan that you do think Miles would be more receptive to?
No, I don't know what would make him say, yeah, geez, I can get behind that, and I think now we have a chance to go to contend and win a Super Bowl. Certainly, Matt Stafford would probably have to pique his attention, but I don't know that that is very likely at all. I'm sure the Browns are doing their due diligence on every single good quarterback that they could possibly get their hands on, so I think they would probably be remiss if they didn't actually at least put in a phone call about Matthew Stafford, but the likelihood of that happening seems at this point pretty low. So I don't know if you can count on something like that happening. Maybe you can start to get him excited about a Cam Ward or a Shador Sanders or whoever they end up with at quarterback out of this rookie class. I think it'll be one of those top two guys. But I don't know. I don't know if any of those things will satisfy him. And I don't know how much he's going to stick to his guns and do what he said, which is, I will do whatever it takes to get the Browns to trade me.
When Kevin Stefanski says that he believes this is a good quarterback class in the draft, is that something you believe from him? Because I hear that, and then I also hear they should call on Matthew Stafford, which I think that makes sense. You hear them connected to Kirk Cousins. We don't know if he'll be available. But to me, if they're interested in the veterans, I maybe don't necessarily buy that they believe in this rookie class. Do you believe what Kevin Stefanski is saying as far as that goes?
Well, I do. I think they need their quarterback of the future, and I think they believe that there is at least one of those guys in this class that can help them go out and win, and they can develop that player, and that they would be really excited to do that. But that certainly isn't going to preclude them from also acquiring a veteran or two. They need at least a bridge quarterback. Now, if a better sort of elite veteran becomes available to them, like a Matthew Stafford, that might change your plans a little bit. But I still think you have to go with the quarterback of the future at number two if you see a guy there that you think can win for you.
All right, Nick Chubb is going to test free agency. Andrew Berry said it himself. First of all, do you think there will be teams lining up at this stage of Nick Chubb's career following yet another injury? And what are the odds he's back with the Cleveland Browns next season?
Well, it does seem like goodbye for Nick Chubb, and I think that's really unfortunate for everyone involved. I think most people covering Nick Chubb just envisioned that he would finish his career here. I'm sure the Browns wanted him to finish his career here, and certainly he wanted that as well. But once again, it is a business, and I think they are looking at it in terms of letting Nick go have an opportunity to see if he can catch on with a team that is really going to still showcase him and let him have an opportunity to be their workhorse back in 2025. If they're not going to do that, then I think it is smart to let him go, see what he can find out there on the open market.
So I'm sure you've seen it by now, but the NFLPA released its annual survey where the players get to vote on what they think of the organizations that they play for. There were a lot of, I think, grades that stood out about what the how the Browns were viewed by their own players. When you took a look at that yesterday or maybe even this morning, what was the thing that stood out most to you, Mary Kay?
Well, of course, we all are abuzz about that in the media room the minute that it comes out, and we all wrote about it, you know, right away yesterday. So one of the things that really stood out to me was the fact that Kevin Stefanski went from a B- down to a C, and not so much that, but the fact that his ranking was 30th out of 32 in the NFL for coaches. And that just seems a bit low to me. I find that kind of hard to believe. And I also find the Browns ranking 30 out of 32 a little bit difficult to believe. So I don't know. I'd like to dig into this a little bit more, see what the participation was like in terms of having their surveys filled out, and maybe ask some guys about it a little bit when we have an opportunity to get back with them. But the coaching thing was one that certainly stood out.
Mary Kay, I want to play some music for you. And this is something near and dear to our hearts on the show because it's the end of an era based on what we heard yesterday. This, of course, the Greenbrier Waltz. Mary Kay, say it ain't so, but your time in West Virginia covering the Cleveland Browns at what amounts to a bomb shelter for some of the big politicians of yesteryear is no longer going to be where they hunker down and get ready for a 3-14 football season. Your thoughts?
Well, you know, the place was just starting to grow on me. At first, the first time that we went down there, it just seemed like 10 days was a long time to be there, to start camp, and to do all the things that you had to do there. But by last year, the media members for sure had finally settled into our digs in Lewisburg, Virginia. And we really enjoyed covering camp at the Greenbrier and all the things that come along with it, or at least some of us did. So I have mixed emotions about it. It is a long time to be away for the start of camp, but by the same token, there are all kinds of great things about it. So I guess I would say there's part of me that was a little bit sad and part of me that was a little bit relieved.
The last waltz. Too bad, Mary Kay. Too bad. All right, Mary Kay.
No falconry for me this year.
Oh, man. How do we recover? All right, stay out of the Marriott Starbucks because I'm worried for your safety, or worried for the safety of whoever you have to get into a brawl with, because it's getting feisty down there. This is what happens at the Combine.
It is. You know, I'm ready, though. I can verbally go at it with anybody. Good. So if someone comes at me, I'm ready.
That's right. You hear that, all of you losers on social media? You hear that? You go after Mary Kay. What's going to happen? All right. Thank you, Mary Kay.
All right. Thank you, guys.
All right. Mary Kay Cabot, Plain Dealer, Cleveland.com. All right. Andrew Berry, 1 o'clock today, right here on 92.3 The Fannies at the Combine. We were going to carry that live and have instant reaction during Baskin and Phelps. So we'll have some fresh audio to reply to tomorrow. Daryl Ryder is in for Ken Carman today. And oh, by the way, your Cavaliers have the best record in the NBA. If you're just waking up today, Oklahoma City lost last night in a tight one down the stretch. Big defensive play down the stretch against the Minnesota Timberwolves. And so here we are on top of the NBA world on February 25th, 216-474-0092. We will get to the Cleveland Browns coming up 15 minutes from now, because plenty of Matt Stafford speculation, especially heating up in Indy at the Combine. Daryl, we have been talking about the passing of Larry Dolan. Now, this did get a lot of people wondering if this means that the Guardians, who right now there is a minority ownership right. by David Blitzer.
Yes.
And it's not his group, right? It's David Blitzer. Because well, he has a sports group that it's also him. Has stake in other, don't they have other baseball?
Yeah, well, he's part of the Washington Commanders ownership group. He, I think, has the New Jersey Devils, okay. Maybe the Sixers. He's got a bunch of
properties.
He is the primary minority owner of the Guardians. Matt Colig, you know, Colig Companies, Colig Racing, Colig Media, is also a minority owner of the Guardians. He's part of, like, the Blitzer group of the, you know what I'm saying? So eventually here in the next couple of years, Blitzer will be taking over as the majority owner of the Cleveland Guardians.
I just saw there was speculation, especially yesterday with the news, that this could expedite the process, that, you know, Paul might have been waiting, you know, while Larry Dolan was still alive, that they were going to hold on to the franchise. Have you heard anything about that?
I haven't heard anything about that. I do know that when Blitzer acquired the minority stake in the ball club, part of the agreement included the option for Blitzer to take majority control of it. So now, whether or not the passing of Larry Dolan will expedite that process, I know the Blitzer group had a lot of feelings about the ballpark renovations and some of the areas of focus is for that project. I will tell you this, that once the team does officially change hands and Blitzer becomes the majority owner, I would look for some other things to move forward, possibly where the parking garage is, which the Guardians now own, the Gateway East Garage between the ballpark and the Rocket Arena. The Guardians took control of that last July as part of their lease extension. They could potentially do a development by Progressive Field there. The Guardians, I don't know if people understand, they actually own the land that borders that garage in East 9th Street. They've owned that for a few years now.
So that wasn't a gateway?
No, that little plot of land right there with the trees and the park and the benches and all that, that actually the Guardians bought that a few years ago because they were beginning the plans of, hey, we could build like a ballpark village like we were seeing all throughout baseball, right? The Washington Nationals have one. St. Louis Cardinals have one. The Atlanta Braves, when they moved into their new ballpark a few years ago, they built one as part of that project. This is the new thing. I mean, we know what the Browns are trying to do in Brook Park with their development next to the Dome. So this is kind of part of the new. It's no longer just about building stadiums for these owners.
Sure.
It's about you're building the adjoining development. So I think that there's some other things that maybe the Dolans didn't want to get into right away. And it's all positive stuff. But I think that you could see some other, you know, Blitzer do some other things adjoining properties and things like that related to the ball club.
You know, we're talking legacy, and I find it really, really fascinating that when I think of Indians/Guardians in my lifetime, I think of a team that overachieved for most of my life. Yeah, the 90s teams should have won at least one World Series, so you know, you could say that by and large, there was some underachieving there, even those were my favorite teams in my life. And I still will look back fondly after all these years.
By the way,
back to that era.
I got to correct myself real quick because it was 6 years. So you're looking at 2028 when the transition, because he bought into them in 22. So it's 6 years. I apologize.
All right. So I've always thought of them as overachievers, especially with the influx of the local TV money in New York and LA and how much more money those teams get to wheel and deal, how, you know, teams like the Guardians and our market size, they just don't spend. And we can have a conversation. Maybe it's not a different day. Maybe it's today, about whether or not you think that's because those ownership groups around baseball are hoarding money. That's what I've seen some. Ken Rosenthal and some of the national
Pirates
reporters.
Owners are accused of it. The A's owners are accused of it. The Marlins owners are accused of it. In fact, I think I saw something where the Marlins need to actually spend some money, or else they're going to
violate the floor.
Well, yeah, they'll violate the floor, and a clause in the collective bargaining agreement will be exercised by the PA for a grievance process for not spending money.
But I have just looked at the way that this team has always been not only just competitive, but the fact that they have been the envy of the Major League Baseball. And it's always really been the Rays and the Guardians over the last how many years that there's a reason so many of your front office members have been poached, because they do it the right way. They do it the best way for the resources. And so that's how I will always look at the Dolans. But yet I talk to people, I have friends that they have the exact opposite take. They feel like, you know, the Dolans have held them back, that they've hoarded money for themselves. And, you know, we're just all debating the books, of which none of these teams really open up their books ever. So it's a tough spot that baseball puts us in, that we have to even have those arguments.
What's interesting is when the Dolans took the team over back in, I think it was 2001, if I remember correctly, or no, it was in 2000, because they won the division in 2001. It was the last year of that glory, you know, the 90s dominance, right? The organization transitioned, right? Because they were finding hitters left and right in the 90s, and they built their team offensively, and then kind of occasionally they develop a pitcher, right? Remember the Jarrett Wright whole thing? They could have traded Jarrett Wright for Pedro Martinez, and they decided not to do it because of, you know, how good Wright was in the 97 World Series, and hindsight being 2020, they should have traded for Pedro. They should have done a lot of things in the 90s that they didn't do, but they shifted from the bats to the pitching, and then look at all the Cy Young Award winners they developed over the years, right? The franchise, Sam McDowell was the only Cy Young Award winner for the franchise in team, you know, and then they shift to this pitching focus because they realized, hey, to be competitive in Major League Baseball, you got to have good pitching. And so that's where they invested their drafting and developing resources in arms. And it started with CC Sabathia back in 1999 when he was drafted and he became a Cy Young winner. You know, Cliff Lee, Corey Kluber, you know, just finding guys and developing them. And so that was a major organizational shift. But as we've gone down the line, going back to Hank Peters back in the late 80s, when Richard Jacobs bought the then Cleveland Indians, they were the laughingstock of baseball, obviously the genesis of Major League and all that, right? You know, Hank Peters developed John Hart. John Hart developed Mark Shapiro. Mark Shapiro developed Chris Antonetti. Chris Antonetti developed Chernoff. You see what I'm saying? And so it's such an impressive feat. And I give the most credit I give the Dolans, aside from the fact that they consistently field a quality product, even though they don't spend like the big boys because they're millionaires in a billionaire's game, is that they're stable. And they basically, you know, they hire smart people to run the operation, and they step back and let. The most controversial thing, obviously, that has happened under their ownership was the name change. That was a very difficult thing for them to do.
And I think that's going to be part of the legacy of this family as well. We're running out of time in this segment, but that's a whole other can of worms to get into. I mean, we could do 3 hours.
All I know is all the people said they were never going to a Cleveland baseball game again. A lot of people went to Cleveland baseball games last season. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I mean, it's part of the fabric of the community, and you know, whatever you call them.
Would you rather be the Guardians or the Cleveland Guardians, or would you rather be them the Nashville whatever they'd be,
or the Indians and lose with another ownership group?
Yeah.